Welcome to Grappling with the Gray, a forum for promoting an ethical mindset and ethical decision-making to help us more clearly see both sides of complex issues and better navigate the moral challenges of everyday life. I'm Rabbi Jonas Goldson, and I'd like to welcome my guest for today. With me is Lieutenant Colonel J.C. Glick, who has boldly stepped in when we had a last-minute cancellation. He is a retired Army Ranger, leadership strategy, and culture advisor, as well as an author and TEDx speaker. Natalia Alvarez is a partnership manager at Rainbow Communications. She has consulted with the UN, the European Commission, and the private sector. And Lavelle DiVincenzi is an international event MC and moderator, podcast host, diversity speaker, and TEDx presenter. Thank you all for being with me today.
It is absolutely wonderful to be here.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And here is the scenario we will be discussing. A teacher at the Private Girls' Day School Trust in the UK was recently ordered to apologize and subsequently told her contract would not be renewed after her class of 11-year-old students protested that her comments were offensive. Her crime? Addressing the class with the words, "Good afternoon, girls." Apparently, the students complained that the teacher misgendered them, since not all of them identify as female. Now, the school website states the following. The Girls' Day School Trust is the UK's leading family of 25 independent girls' schools, including two academies. In all of our schools, academic excellence is a given. At the GDST, we develop character beyond the curriculum, ensuring our girls are confident and fearless, determined to show what they can do. Nothing holds our girls back. They're encouraged to embrace every role and subject. This is the GDST difference. We are not going to get into the debate of gender identity, but is there something incongruous about a self-named girls' school referring to students as girls on its own website while disciplining a teacher for calling students girls? Is the school indulging a double standard that undermines its educational integrity, or is there some justification for the distinction? If character development is an educational value, shouldn't that involve addressing grievances in a non-confrontational and non-punitive way? Would the school serve its students better by modeling how to resolve differences of belief and opinion through civil discourse rather than combativeness? Finally, how else might the school administration have addressed student complaints? The floor is open.
Oh, don't all rush at once. You made it so simple. It's like, oh, this is a really, really straightforward conversation.
I know. I hope we can fill the whole half hour, but
I mean, there's no way we're going to trip over ourselves as trying to consider this one, is there? Oh, I'll boldly go where nobody else wishes to go first, shall I, and kick it off. It's an interesting debate because I think there's lots of things in general in and around the world where our perspectives on things shift, right? There was a time we thought the world is flat and now we know it's not. And I think there are lots of these areas where people are fighting to be seen, and I don't think there's a problem with that. And there's also a lot of areas in which, let's face it, when we're used to things being a certain way and language being a certain way and being able to interact in a certain way and it changes overnight, there's a little bit of catching up to do. And I think it's a great conversation about how do we do that in a way that I would, you know, that isn't, that that allows for a dialogue to happen. I think as soon as we start drawing lines in the sand around anything where we're going to put this here, but then we're going to tie ourselves in knots with rules over there, I just think it gets really quite tricky. I'm always a fan of let's have an open conversation because we're coming from very different perspectives, and it's not to say one is right and one is wrong, but having a clear understanding I think is possibly the bit that's been missing. It kind of feels like a line's been drawn in the sand that doesn't agree with the very title of the school, shall I say.
So in other words, you think there might have been an opportunity missed here?
Oh, absolutely. 1,000%.
Concur. I mean, everything that was just said, concur. I mean, I think we've,
we've gotten to a place, first of all, intent matters, right? Do we, intent of the educator matters, the intent of the person that is doing the offending actually matters. I think we've forgotten that, that, you know, I can, people get offended all the time. There's a separate side to that that I'll get into in one second, but the first part is, was my intent to offend you? That's a question that we all have to, that we have to ask ourselves. Is this person trying to offend me? Or did they make a mistake, or did they, whatever. Then there's the other side, which is, you're offended, so what, right? I mean, I think there's a really, you know, Ricky Gervais actually has a pretty funny saying that says, you know, it's not offensive unless you're offended and you could be wrong. And I kind of like that idea. The other piece is, and when I looked at this, he said, okay, this is a school. There's a whole bunch of educated people who are looking at this. I'm quite confident, like, this seems like a misstep that was just not thought about by probably some bureaucrat who said, okay, this is what we have to do, as opposed to an education system that's like, what an excellent opportunity to talk about all these concepts, right? Like, should we still be the girl school? I know that the English hate their tradition. You know, should we be a girl school? Should we really look at somebody who misgenders us as a negative thing or as a learning experience? I mean, how do we see these things? And if you were trying to really develop character in an individual, and I read the article as soon as I saw this, you know, some of the things that the girls did, and again, it doesn't say whether they were disciplined, the next day that kind of started this whole path and started getting all the visibility, it didn't show really good character. And I think that the organization has an opportunity to say, well, let's talk about the kind of people that we want to be, because there's a difference between having women who are strong. I have daughters, right? I have one daughter and two stepdaughters. I want them to be strong. I want them to be fearless. And I want them to be jerks. And I think that there's a line that we have to consider. And this seems like a really good place that was a learning place.
The first question that stood up for me was why the students, they were offended. And I mean, it's obvious why they were, but why they react the way they reacted. Because if someone calls me silly and it's a mistake, it's like, okay. But if I've been called silly 10,000 times, then I might get a little bit upset and offended. So what is it that is happening there in that reaction? It's my first reaction is curiosity, because sometimes we address one issue, which is very small, because we don't want to address the big one. So I would like to know if the students, they feel heard in this debate about gender identity. And not just specifically in this matter, but rather in general, what level of dialogue we have about this issue that is very messy at this moment, because there is not regulation and everybody is like a little bit in a gray area. So are they reacting to this teacher, or are they reacting to something that is in the background? And that was my first question when I read the information. It was like, how interesting, and what is the issue here?
Natalie, I love the curiosity. I love that term curiosity, because I think we miss it very often. But JC, I can't say I agree that it's always to do with intent, because I can intend, have a very innocent intention and still land in a space out of ignorance that creates a result that's not positive. And so I think to say that it's simply, let's have a look at somebody's intention. I agree the intention is important, because if somebody's coming from a place of malice, that's very different from somebody coming from a place of ignorance, misinformation, misunderstanding, that sort of space. There's an opportunity for education in one sense, in the other, it's just, there's an opportunity, you know, so it matters in terms of the approach that we take going forward. But that your intention was good, but it was misinformed, doesn't mean that what you did was okay. I think that's where I kind of we can't sit there and say, oh, they're well intentioned, so it's fine there. You know, it's kind of like they're well intentioned but possibly misinformed.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know that I said it's okay. What I did say is I consider it differently. If my kids do something dumb,
yeah,
and they knew what they were doing. Let's say they changed a grade on their report card, because I did that once. They knew what they were doing, they knew it was wrong. I look at that differently than, oh, you know, I didn't realize that this person had an honor code in their school and I gave them an old paper of mine. I handle both of those things very differently. Now, I think that we have a tradition of reason that dates back to the Stoic philosophers, that reason would dictate where you land. It does have to be considered. I mean, our legal system is quite set up like that. Both our legal systems are set up like that, that intent does matter. Mm-hmm. And the outcome that you receive based on your intent, that's why there's manslaughter and first degree murder. And I don't like to say it's from ignorance, because I think, you know, I liked what you said in the beginning. I have a young mentor who tells me everything we know today is wrong. That means both of us are wrong. I like that. The earth was flat kind of thing. Hey, you know what? We're going to find out something. But I do think that we have to be kind to each other. And
agreed.
And that's about intent. If somebody says something to me in malice, that I take that differently. If somebody doesn't, then I'm going to be kind back and say, hey, wait a second, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I can just take a personal example. I have an unusual first name, and people often mispronounce it. And I don't think anybody's doing that out of malice. So I will typically correct people, unless they're close. If they're close, I'll usually let it pass. Because, you know, I don't need to create tension unnecessarily. And I've actually interacted with people who have repeatedly had trouble pronouncing my name. But if I understand, very much to, I think, what your point is, JC, if I understand that there is no ill intent, so I can gently correct people. And then people will make assumptions about me based upon my being Jewish when they don't necessarily, they're not necessarily informed about that. There's always an opportunity to educate, to create new bonds by actually explaining who we are, why we are particular about certain aspects of our identity, our beliefs.
And what happens even if you're explaining that and people don't take it?
What's that?
I mean, what about if the intent is good? I mean, I don't want to hurt you, but I truly believe that women are not as intelligent as men. And I'm going to keep on repeating that idea. Mm. I don't want to hurt you. But so although intent is important, the action is at one moment is going to be out there. So what are you going to do with all these good intentions that are causing harm? I wonder. It's just a question. Because
no,
also the law
that's...
says that even if I'm not aware of the law applies to me. I can have good intentions, but if I'm speeding and at the road, I'm going to get a fine. Even if my intention is very good, you know, and I really want to comply with the law. So intention matter up to one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the question is what we do when harm has been done, when something happened independently of our intention.
To me, I find it really fascinating because people react differently depending on the circumstance and background. So if we take it out of the context of identity, and identity has many different elements, but I can take a similar sort of analogy where people will say, I don't see color, for example, and it's coming from a well-intentioned space. And yet at the same time, it's like, but if you don't see color, then you don't see me. And that conversation again and again and again and again and again and again is very draining for an individual. And so even for a well-intentioned person, the individual that that's coming to, it's coming into a space where that person has come with a history. And so depending on even the intention can be great, but it's landed and it's possibly triggered something within an individual. And if we then start to think about young adults, perhaps their ability to navigate that space, to process that information, isn't quite there. I mean, we have grown adults who struggle to navigate and process. And so the truth is, even with great intention, sometimes that intention is speaking into a space of trauma. And when that is the case, we have two separate things to look at. We have, is it the responsibility of the individual who perhaps has just got too much to process to explain? You know, all you've done is just, let me just smash that hurt button, and it's just all gone off. Now you're not speaking to a logical individual anymore. You're speaking to somebody who's now in a space of pain or remembering how others have dealt with them. And so there is an educational piece. I guess the question is, who does that sit with? And it's effectively dealing with the individual who's had that conversation, because they may be coming from a very well-meaning place, and then all of this stuff is spewed at them. They're being, you know, roped across the coals, and it's like, well, this is my first offense, and was it really that bad, and why am I being treated quite so heavily for it? And yet the other side of it is, but we've been fighting this fight for a while, and I just can't do it anymore. And so I think there is really that balance of looking at it from both perspectives, and I'm not saying one is better than the other, but it is sometimes quite helpful to also see the point of the individual in that space who may have been sitting in a lot of pain for a long time, who may have had a number of other conversations with other people, and you just happen to be that straw that broke the back.
And I think it's personal responsibility on both sides.
Yeah.
I think there's probably everybody for different reasons on this panel that deal with something, some sort of perspective that exists, whether you're, you know, a person of color, whether you're a woman, whether your religion. For me, there is an idea of people who are veterans who have gone to war and what they are like, and quite honestly, there's an opinion that military folks are not that bright, and that is something that I hear all the time. I will get done with a speech and somebody will say, oh, I didn't expect you to be so articulate. But I have personal responsibility in that, in a person who has experienced trauma, in that I go, they're not making me feel a way. I am feeling a way because of an action. Not them. It's an action, and it's on me. I've got to deal with that. Now, I would like to educate. I try not to get angry. I think we probably all try not to get angry. When I get angry, I remove myself, because I know. And we have to take that person accountability. So I would expect the person who, I wouldn't say that, let's go back to the subject. I don't think the teacher should be made to apologize. I think we want teachers that go, geez, I didn't want that to make you feel that way. I want them to apologize because they take personal accountability of, I said this and it hurt you. And most of us don't want to hurt other people. Mm-hmm. We go, hey, I'm going to, like, I may not agree with you, right, in the whole thing. I might say, well, look, you know, I might have a perspective on transgender, and I might not agree with you, but I want to be considerate of you. I want to be kind to you. So I'm going to be. At the same token, the person who is feeling offended or who's got that piece, they're going to take a little personal accountability that, all right, that wasn't out of malintent. That wasn't, okay. And maybe I just need to remove myself because I have had this piled up, and I'm like, not you, but I don't want to talk about this right now. And I think that's really important for a civil discourse, which we don't tend to have anymore.
There is that reactiveness to our interactions. And, you know, we call it dialogue because there are two sides to it. And I think that JC, you really touched on a point that applies to so many of these discussions and topics, is one of personal responsibility. It's my responsibility to do the best I can to be respectful towards others. And it's my responsibility to acknowledge when I've made a misstep but it's also my responsibility to presume positive intent to the degree that I can. And if someone says something that's offensive to me, I can ask myself, why am I offended? I should ask myself, what's the proper response? How do I gauge that? If the person doesn't appear to have intended malice, then I can very matter-of-factly say, what you said was hurtful to me, and this is why. And then wait to see what kind of a response to get. And the point that you made earlier, Natalia, what happens when people dig in or double down? Then the dynamic changes considerably. They're the ones who are forcing some kind of confrontation by refusing to take responsibility for themselves, the possibility that maybe they aren't coming from a place of integrity.
Oh, I 1,000% agree. I don't, JC, to be clear, I'm not sitting advocating that because there was pain that one should then say, well, the world owes me something, because I absolutely do not sit on that train either. I'm like, listen, it's always, there's two sides that create an argument and both people have to dig their heels in and one person has to take responsibility first. And I do think that word responsibility is so important to know individually, where are we? I think we've developed this, how do we call it now? Cancel culture. That word just drives me nuts. What is this idea of cancel culture? You did something that offended me, and now I should be, because of that, I should take my eraser and rub you off the face of the planet. And I just don't, I can't sit with that personally. It doesn't sit very well with me. I think there's so much more to be had when every individual, we're all learning, we're all growing, we don't always get it right. You know, we're going to trip over ourselves, we're going to say something that's going to inadvertently offend somebody, we're going to learn something new, we're going to use terms we shouldn't have used when we shouldn't have used them. It's just, that's life's journey. And if all of the time you're going to have Teflon shoulders and let it slide off you and not take any accountability to grow, I think that's a problem. And so I absolutely agree with JC. I think there's a lot to be said for individuals stepping more and more into personal ownership of what's around them. And we always have a choice. You can walk away. You know, you don't have to just blurt out the first thing on your mind every time. I know people like to do it on that, you know, type at your keyboard and go nuts. Right. And I just think if you wouldn't shout it in a room in front of somebody, maybe, you know, that go away, blow off some steam, sleep on it a couple of days and then come back with, where would I like this to go, really? And often it is, how can we, you know, to use a scenario as an opportunity for growth, I think is better than to use it as an opportunity to draw a line in the sand and say, this is us and that is you. That's when I always have a problem with something.
And I think adding up to, and I agree what you're saying, is that for people, and that's my experience, to own our own mistakes and to be able to be accountable. Sometimes we need to be listened. We need to be heard. And that's also important, especially when there is some sort of a conflict and things like what really people are upset. What is it? What are you or why you're offended? And what is this about and what else? And when people feel that they matter, their opinions and how they feel and their beliefs, it's easier to own and to be kind and to be empathic because, well, somebody's listening to you and you feel that you matter. So sometimes we jump too fast into what needs to be done. And we don't want to stay in the uncomfortable place of listening and, you know, staying there where things are really like tense and where people are like, and that's an important place to be in this tension. We disagree. I don't like what you're saying. It's hurting me. And doing a little bit of more listening to see what is really boiling down and what is this about, really? Because sometimes we have, when there is a conflict, there is one level, but there are two underneath. And finding all these nuances, I think it's important to be able to go to a place where you can find all the elements that you were mentioning.
Yeah, that's a critical point because when we demonstrate that we're listening to someone else, that increases the likelihood that they'll listen to us. And then we can actually start to have a conversation and learn from each other.
Do you think we've lost the skill of listening, like really listening?
It's gotten a lot harder. It's gotten a lot less common.
Have we lost the skill of listening, which I would probably say we have.
Mm.
But there's also this piece, and this is something that I learned after I got out of the military and started writing and speaking. I go into everything, whether I'm writing a piece or speaking, and I go, nobody wants to hear my stuff. Nobody cares. And what that does is it frees me up, because I might disagree that there is a need to be heard. There's a need to connect. That we know that's a physiological piece. The need to be heard is about ego, right? It's about, like, I want my opinion. I want you to feel my opinion because that gives it merit. Honestly, and again, I'm older. I'm maybe less wise. Or I gotta be really wise because I know how dumb I am now. But the older I get, the more I go, you know what? It's meditative. And it doesn't need to be shared. If somebody chooses not to listen, okay. If somebody chooses not to consider my feelings, okay, that's not my people. If somebody chooses not to be kind or agree with me, okay. I can still live in a social contract until I can. And then I go to try to change the social contract. And I think I'm not saying that is it. I'm saying from my personal perspective, yes, we have learned the ability to listen. We don't listen to each other. But I think a lot of that, and it's chicken or the egg, a lot of that comes from everybody thinks, you know, it's that Twitter thing. Just because you can say it doesn't mean you should. Mm. And just because it's your opinion, there's some stuff that I got to be honest with you. I might have an opinion on it. It probably doesn't matter. And I'm okay with that.
We actually had this conversation once before that you know, self-censoring has two sides to it. Not everything. I had a in seminary, there was another fellow there from New York, and I said to him once, you know what I like about you? You say everything I think. He had no filter. Everything just came right out. And I don't think we want to live in that world. But the other kind of self-censoring is when I'm afraid to say what I think. Because, as you mentioned, Lavelle, to the cancel culture, the attacks that might come if I deviate from the script, I can find myself in a lot of trouble and a lot of discomfort. So finding that balance, what should I say, what needs to be said, what must be said, and how to say it has so much to do with how we communicate effectively.
Yeah, for me, it's always been, what is the intention? What am I hoping to gain from sharing this? You know, what am I hoping to gain from sharing this? So if I'm not sharing it and I'm scared, but I know that it's going to have a greater impact for a wider group of people, then that comes back to personal responsibility. Get unscared, Lavelda. Just get unscared. Figure out the best way for you to start communicating a message that others need to hear, right? Because I can see what the impact of that is going to be. Am I just saying this so I can look good, feel good, people can think I'm amazing and awesome? Am I just saying this for a look at me moment? Then what's the point? And so it's a skill as a moderator I really had to hone, because there's so many things that people can say in a 30-minute conversation. But what's the purpose of this dialogue? And what is the outcome we're shooting for? And does the thing that you want to share aid that, or does it do the opposite? Because if it's not adding to the conversation, it's taking away from it. And I think often where it's so easy to throw your two pennies worth into anything with social media nowadays, we've gotten used to throwing our two pennies in and not thinking, what is the point? If you don't like somebody's content, for example, you've got options. You don't have to tell them. You could just not look at their content anymore. Like, it's really not that difficult. And so I do love this conversation around, you know, if we're going to go back to intention, what's the intention with what you're saying? And, you know, back to the conversation about the school, what was the intention of the child in bringing up how they felt, and what is the intention of the school in the way that they've chosen to deal with it? Does it actually meet the wider goals for education, for society, for a movement around gender? Or have they actually, by the choices and the intention behind it, have they made decisions that are going contrary to what the intended movement forward and trajectory was? And I think it's an interesting dialogue and an interesting way of looking at things.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, but what response would you have liked to have seen, any of you or all of you, what response would you have liked to have seen from the school different from what they did?
That's a way to silence people, isn't it?
I'm really very bad at these things because for me, it's a matter of learning. I mean, the question is, are we creating a space for learning? What are we learning out of this for the future in terms of gender identity, in terms of how we're going to deal with conflict? And yeah, so that's because it's so difficult to say what is right or what is wrong. For me, I mean, I don't find that I'm in a position to make any suggestion on this, but rather throw in a couple of questions of this. I mean, how curious I've been about the other person's interest and reasons and how they were feeling and their belief system and what are we learning as a community out of this? And is it helping us and how? So any sort of conflict for me at the end comes up with these sorts of questions. And if the answer is, I only learn that I'm right and I have the right to be right, well, maybe we need to do a little bit more learning. But if it's how much you can move from your own position is for me what is interesting in any kind of these situations. And it might be a lot of learning and we don't know. So it's not up to me, I think, to decide that.
I struggle with it because having grown up in a country where I've watched the media pick and choose what they want to report upon, I simply don't feel I have sufficient information about what the school actually did to be able to comment. And so I think that's where I seriously struggle to say, how would I prefer them to deal with it? Because I don't know that I know how they did. What I know is what the end outcome was, but I don't know, there's a whole bit in the middle. I kind of know somebody was upset, a teacher got fired in the end over it, and it looks as if it's contrary to the way that the school positions themselves. But there's always so many nuances and so many other details. And so it's really difficult to then be in a space where I don't feel like everybody's had an opportunity to really say their part and then me say, it should have been like this. I don't know. I think it's
maybe I should have phrased the question differently. How might they have dealt with it in a way that would be positive for everyone?
I actually hope that what they did was look at this as an opportunity to talk about how do we resolve conflict? How do we deal with feelings that are uncomfortable? How do we deal with speech that, you know, is awkward and hasn't really caught up to culture or science? And how do we do this and how do we move forward? I would hope that what they're doing is looking forward, not backwards. And how do we prevent something like this from happening in the future? What's happened has happened, and there are consequences to our actions all the time. We can minimize some of those consequences when it comes to something like this. But what's really important is how do we move forward together? To come together to create, you know, a better way of being. And I think, and I hope that's kind of where they went.
You know, I had forgotten about this and just remembered it literally a couple of minutes ago, but my first day teaching high school in the United States, I was teaching in a religious, Jewish religious school. And my first five classes went very smoothly. And I don't believe I had been properly prepped for my last class of the day. I walk in, it's a group of ninth grade girls. They all look very mature and studious. And what I didn't realize is that there was a certain zeitgeist, a certain attitude among them, that they, many of them, considered themselves young feminists, and they saw me as representing the, you know, patriarchy, which wasn't a word that was so much used back then. And we just got off on the wrong foot. I made assumptions about them, they made assumptions about me, and things got very tense. And a number of them reported to their parents things that I had said, things that were misrepresentative or out of context. And the parents complained to the principal, the students complained to the principal. And the principal, the first thing he did is he came and he sat in on a class and observed what was going on. And the next thing he did was had a conference with the parents and me. And some of the parents were quite hostile and quite combative. But because of his mediation, things got smoother. And by the end of the year, we had a functioning class. We didn't all get to be really warm, fuzzy buddies with each other. But it was a learning experience for all of us, including me. Because there was an approach taken, let's try to bring everyone together and develop and promote mutual understanding and respect. And to a large extent, that was achieved. And I think that if people in leadership roles approach conflict with that in mind, then whatever the issue is, will often, we may not agree with each other at the end of the day. I hate that phrase, at the end of the day. We may not end up agreeing with each other, but we can end up respecting each other. Mm-hmm. And we can end up treating each other the way we want to be treated without compromising our values or sacrificing our principles. So we've run a little bit over, but thank you for engaging in what was not an easy conversation. Natalia Alvarez, JC Glick, and Lavelda Vincenzi, thank you all for your participation. For those of you who are watching and listening, if you have a topic you'd like to take up, please go to jonasandgoldson.com and use the contact information to submit your idea. If it's something compelling, we will definitely use it for a future episode when we have another panel convene to grapple with the gray.